in 1974. Well, let's back it up. My name is Francine Cosman. And in 1974, my family and I moved to Bedford. And we moved into the subdivision called Bedford Village, which is just in off the Hammonds Plains Road. It was considered very avant-garde and modern in terms of the housing models in Bedford because it was all wood vertical cladding. There were no grass lawns. It was environmentally sensitive. It had wood chips instead of grass, and it was built into all big sections of rock. So we all had big rocks in our properties and rock cliffs behind us, and it probably was part of what used to be called the Barrens. And I don't know if you've heard that word before about the rock structures in Bedford. Bedford, prior to any settlement, was sort of carved out because of glacial action, and it left long ridges of granite that from the air would look like the backs of dinosaurs. And those long stretches of granite would have some ridges and valleys and lots of pine trees and mixed forest. And in the early settlement days of Bedford, in the 1700s, those areas were great for kids to explore, and that is actually captured in some old history that children would love to explore around. And even when we moved here in 1974, the population was somewhere around 8,000 people, and there was still lots of undeveloped land and undeveloped forest tracts. So people used those woods for lots of things, for hiking and hunting and exploring. You know, it was a vast playground for kids and adults. So we moved there, and coming through our subdivision was a little brook that connected from Jack's Lake up in the woods to Paper Mill Lake. And the attraction for us moving into that subdivision was we were within 3 minutes walking distance of Paper Mill Lake for summer and winter recreation. And then suddenly one day in the newspaper came the announcement that the government of the day, the municipal government of the day, Halifax, Dartmouth, and Sackville, were going to locate a garbage dump up in Jack's Lake. A landfill, they called it, but it was basically an open-air garbage dump. And the current garbage dump in 1974 or 73 that the cities were using was now so full that they had to seek a new site. And I guess the politicians of the day thought, that's not going to bother anybody to stick it up in Jack's Lake. But what it bothered was a whole pile of people in Bedford, and our family in particular, because that little stream feeding off of Jack's Lake was coming through our neighborhood, and it was going to effectively pollute the small Paper Mill Lake that we had planned on swimming in every summer. So that started a colossal battle all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada to keep the garbage dump out of Jack's Lake and to protect the Bedford environment. And I was one of many people who fought that battle. And our local government in Bedford was run by what was called a service commission, the Bedford Service Commission. And they had the power and authority to set an area rate, it was like a local tax. And in order to fund the fight, we had to have community support, and we had to have the service commission saying, we will fund the legal bills. And so the service commission struck an area rate on every single person living in Bedford to pay the legal bills. And we took on City Hall, basically, and we fought it for a very long time with volunteers. One lawyer from a legal firm took it on, and in the end, we brought it all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada, and we won. So we kept the dump out of Bedford. It was an impressive fight, and it then was moved to a site that was selected out off Highway 101 in Upper Sackville. And that's where it rested until the last several years when it was full again and had to be moved to another location.
How old were you at the time?
I guess I was in my late 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't just a solo effort. You know, mm-hmm. It was a lot of us working together and struggling through it. And it was a very difficult time emotionally and energetically. So the result of that fight, some of us became spokespersons in a more articulate way than others. And so that sort of called attention on us. And a lot of people asked me if I would run for county council. Our local municipal government in the 70s and earlier was on Halifax County municipality as government. And they asked me if I would run in the next fall election. I agreed to do that. The person I was running against dropped out of the race before the deadline for submitting your papers. So I went in by acclamation. And that was quite a shock because I'd never been a politician before. There I was on county council, and the issues of that period were rapid urbanization of the community of Bedford. Many of us were struggling against the fact that historic buildings were being torn down for things like muffler shops. Apartment high-rise buildings were going up in residential neighborhoods. We had no protection in terms of planning strategy. We had nothing effective for zoning the community, and therefore the group of us who fought the garbage fight began to focus on, are we getting our dollar value out of being part of Halifax County Council? That proceeded forward to then becoming the question, should we try and find our way out of county council government and form a town. And there hadn't been a new town in Nova Scotia in something like 65 years. So it wasn't an easy thing we undertook. But again, we got an area rate struck to do the studies. So we had to do financial analysis of our ability to pay and to be a town. And what would the cost be of education and planning and police and fire and all the elements, the multitudinous elements that form local government. And we had to go before, have you heard of the Utilities and Review Board?
No.
No, okay. It's the Public Utilities and Review Board is the body that is vested with making these decisions, having the public hearings on things like power rates. Every year the power company goes before the IRB and asks for an increase in the rate. And it's that governance that oversees whether or not a power company can add to the rate, for example, or other public issues and things that, you know, have an impact on how people can pay. So we went. We were required to take our request for township before the Utilities and Review Board and hold public hearings. And anybody can come to those public hearings and make a presentation either for or against what is being proposed. And that costs money. We had to obviously prepare our inputs with real hard, fast financial data and analyze, could we afford it or couldn't we afford it? What would the impact be on Halifax County Municipality, who, of course, didn't want us to leave because we were providing the lion's share of tax from this urban area, and we would be taking that away from Halifax County if we succeeded. So it became quite a protracted effort. And in the end, the Utilities and Review Board ruled that we had the capacity to self-govern and we had the financial basis for self-governance in terms of our tax dollars that were created in Bedford. And they ruled we could become a town. The first one in, well, by then it was about 66 years. So I just thought, oh, that's great. Now we'll have a mayor and we'll have a town council, you know. And I wasn't going to run. I thought, no, I've done my thing. So, but people kept coming up to me and calling me at home and saying, well, we think you should run for mayor. I thought, mayor? I can't be a mayor, you know. But in the end, they convinced me. And I ran against three men, and I beat them by a landslide. So we had quite a challenge in setting up the new town, and the incorporation day was July 1st, 1980, and we had that service at the Charles P. Allen School, and about 1,000 people came to see the lieutenant governor and the members of the legislature and the members of parliament. All were there as guests on the stage, and we got our official document declaring that we were the town of Bedford, and we got, you know, the document with the big red seal on it, and we had a wonderful celebration because Bedford Days was going on too. So mm-hmm. That was a pretty amazing thing that happened that day. And then the real work of making it all come together and work started. So we had to hire a police department. Initially, we were policed by the RCMP in Bedford. And we had to set up a planning department and a school board. And we added into the volunteer fire department with full-time fire department people as well. And we hired all the staff that were needed. And we set up municipal offices in the Bedford Tower. And it just was exhaustive. We used to have very long work weeks. We were paid a pittance. My first stipend was $3,000. It wasn't a salary. It was what was called a stipend. And that was pretty paltry because I was putting in 70 to 80 hours a week on this first year of the town coming together. We were still in a contractual arrangement with the municipality of the County of Halifax. They kept ownership of the sewer and water treatment plant. So we had to contract with them for our sewer to go through that plant, which it did anyway. And we had to contract an arrangement over the new high school because the high school was deemed to be owned by Halifax County. So that turned into a huge negotiating battle. I mean, it was really a tough battle. And we contracted our social services because social services was being provided by the County of Halifax for clients in those days. So there were a number of contractual things that had to be put in place. We weren't just totally home free on our own as a town. And that would hurt us down the road. It actually did. So I stayed as mayor for one term for 3 years, and then the provincial government offered me the job of being the president of the Advisory Council on the Status of Women for Nova Scotia. So I decided that was of interest to me because it was a wider sphere of work that I could undertake on behalf of women, and I feel passionately about those issues. I'm a feminist. I have been for as long as I can remember, and to me, I define feminism as seeking equality. It isn't based on anti-men or anything else. It's based on equality issues for women. So I took that job, and I didn't reoffer as mayor. 1980 was quite different from the Bedford of today. We didn't have condominiums. We had an increase in apartments. We put in our own municipal planning strategy, which was another exhaustive community effort, but it came from the ground up, from people locally doing it. It wasn't something that we did ourselves as council. Yeah, the Bedford Place Mall was not there years back. It was just a big, vast floodplain, and when it got developed, of course, it had a huge impact in floodwaters because there's no place to flood except over that plain. So when the Sackville River would flood, it did have a significant impact on people living on Union Street with the mall in the way, because the mall was on ground that would have formerly absorbed floodwaters. So, we didn't have the complex down at Sobeys. That was a discount store, was on that site. And it was really a bad discount store. It was rat-infested and all sorts of awful, icky things. we didn't have all the construction off of where the current Nine Mile River is and where Larry UTEC is and Bedford West. None of that was happening. So our boundary, the town was 16 square miles, but a lot of it was forest. Whereas in today's term, that's all opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the barrens now have been blasted out of existence, which is too bad because they were an interesting geological feature of the town. I mentioned earlier that I took on the job of the status of women president, and I traveled all of Nova Scotia and as well to Ottawa on the issues affecting women and girls. And at that time, there were task forces on prostitution and pornography and on family violence. So those became major focuses of my work, doing a lot of small community meetings across the province, talking to women about those issues and working to get more support from the provincial government for homes for battered women and more structures in place legally to protect women from acts of violence. So I spent 4 years with that organization, and I felt that the provincial government of the day was dragging its heels on doing any meaningful responses to the issues. So I quit, in a big loud way, quit. And that was the premier then was John Buchanan, the conservative premier. And I had been hired under a conservative government. And after I quit in such a vocal way, the Nova Scotia Liberal Party asked me to chair a task force on the concerns of women. So I spent a year doing that and authored a report on the various issues that I heard all across Nova Scotia affecting women and girls, and social equality, justice issues, pornography, prostitution, family violence. It was a big body of work that came out in the report that I reported on and wrote and submitted to the Liberal government. So after that, I was asked to become the executive director of the Nova Scotia Liberal Party. So I did that. And I organized them for really the effort to become election ready and work with the 52 constituency executives across Nova Scotia. So that was a big job, a lot of traveling, a lot of time away. And I guess around 1992, people began asking me if I would run in provincial politics as an MLA. And at first I didn't think I would, but then the more I talked to people, the more I got interested in it. So I did seek the nomination, and I won the nomination.
For the Liberal Party?
For the Liberal Party. And the seat out here at that time encompassed Bedford and went all the way to the airport. So it was Bedford, Fall River, Waverly. The geographic territory was very large. And I ran in 1993 in that election under John Savage, and we formed the government that year. And I was appointed whip. Whip is a government term for the person who makes sure when a vote is coming in the legislature that all your members are there and present to vote on the bill. Because if you lost a vote on a bill, it would be very, very mortifying. It's just unheard of to mm-hmm. have that happen. So the whip's role is one of making sure you know where all your members are and making sure they're there for the vote. And some votes are recorded votes. The opposition can request a recorded vote. So my job as whip was to make sure our Liberal members were in the House if it was a recorded vote or otherwise. I had to know where every one of them was at any given time. At some point in my first term of office, I was asked to become the Deputy Speaker of the House. So I did that, and it meant learning all the parliamentary procedural rules and managing the conduct of the House when the session was in and when the members were in and the debates and all that good stuff. And I had to chair the budget sessions in the legislature when we had a budget and it had to go what was called the Committee of the Whole House. I had to be the one who chaired all the budget debates as deputy speaker. So that was a big responsibility, a very big learning curve for me. And there were times when I hated the job, and there were other times when I thought, oh, man, this is okay. I can do this, you know. But I did do it, and I think I did it reasonably well. So, yeah. And then we were in chaotic times in the legislature because Premier Savage proposed amalgamating all the area into one municipal unit, because it was Halifax, it was Dartmouth, it was the county of Halifax, it was the town of Bedford, it was the Sackvilles, and all the rural communities beyond those boundaries as well. And he proposed making it one city called Halifax Regional Municipality, HRM. The point of that ostensibly was that it was going to save the taxpayers money, which I don't think it ever did, and it was going to stop the competition between urban units, Dartmouth fighting Halifax, Halifax fighting Bedford. We were all scrabbling for development dollars and for business to come in and for industry to come in, you know, to support the tax base. And it was always a competition. Who could offer what best prize to make you come there, you know? Mm-hmm. And Dr. Savage's vision was that by amalgamation, all that would stop and we would be one cohesive municipal unit and ostensibly save taxpayers' dollars. Well, I'm absolutely certain there were no savings to be had as this rolled out. This was an extremely divisive issue. And particularly for me as MLA of Bedford, having been its first mayor, and a new town just the decade before, it seemed to everybody it was ridiculous. Bedford had a plebiscite, out of which 6 out of 10 people voted against amalgamation. But what Bedfordites didn't realize was, as their MLA, Bedford only formed 30% of my riding. I went all the way up to the airport. I was in all those other communities that I also had to represent those voices. So it was like sitting on the hot plate for a long time. And in the end, amalgamation was forced on all the communities. Dr. Savage, for a variety of reasons, that first government was very unpopular. We had labor union issues, and we had the amalgamation issue, et cetera, et cetera. So in the end, he resigned. He didn't stay on as premier. There was a leadership race, and Russell McClellan became the premier in Dr. Savage's place. I was put into the Nova Scotia cabinet, the executive council, after 1997. Now I'm scrambling on the date there, but Savage was gone. We had the election with Russell McClellan, and he came in with a minority government. And that is, a lot of people say, well, I like minority governments, but you're really, if you don't have 3 or 4 years to do your program of government, it becomes opportunistic for the opposition, thinking, well, let's call an early election and we'll kick that party out. I have to watch my language. So I was given the privilege of being Minister of Community Services, which is about the third highest ranking portfolio. You have education, finance, well, health, finance, community services, and education are the top 4 ranked portfolios in government for responsibility and the size of your budgets. So I was given community services, and then at some point the civil service was added in. I became Minister of Civil Service at the same time, and the status of women and the Disabled Persons Commission. So I had a lot of responsibilities. As a minority government, when the election got called, we were done. The summer of that election in 99, my husband died, and I did not feel that I could reoffer. I didn't have it in me to go campaigning, for starters. So I walked away from politics, and that was the end of that political career for me, you know. Mm-hmm. So I really can look back on that time and say I went through tremendous challenges, and how I ever won that second election still amazes me, because people were really angry about amalgamation, but I still won the riding. So I was quite surprised at that. So I did get 2 terms. yeah. So then I went into retirement, started doing some of the things that I really had been putting off doing for a long time. And you and I talked about writing. I've been writing off and on all my life. At one point, I was a columnist for the newspaper. I did an opinion column called Perspective for 3 years. I am an artist. My medium is pastels. I make no effort to sell my art. I usually give it away. But I'm an amateur artist. You know, I like to paint. When my husband died, I had moved to Purcell's Cove at that time when I married him. He was my second husband. I wanted to get back into Bedford, so I moved back into Bedford into a condominium, and I stayed in the condominium for a little less than 2 years, and I wanted to be back in a house. So I bought my home up on Moyers Mill Road, and I'm there until today. You know, it's 11 years up on the hill. So I have I've had a busy life. I'm 76, and it's been a busy, interesting life. My first husband and I raised 2 daughters here in Bedford, and one of whom still lives in our old house in Bedford Village. My other daughter lives in Los Angeles now with her family. Yeah, we raised our girls here, and we're part of that community for all that period of time. That was a different perspective than politics. My initial profession was nursing. Yeah, I graduated from the St. John General Hospital, and I did a diploma postgraduate in obstetrical nursing, which I did in New York City, and that was an adventure too. And after I retired from politics and my family were grown up, I started doing more traveling. Mm-hmm. So I've had trips to 38 countries now.
Wow.
Yeah, I love to travel, but I'm actually beginning to think maybe I'm getting a little too old to do it. But traveling always held a fascination for me. I have a passion for art, an absolute passion for art. So the first place I head to when I travel is the nearest art gallery and or museums and manor houses and historic homes, mm-hmm. things like that. And I'm a Downton Abbey fan because that's the kind of house I love to visit.
That's
know?
Awesome.
Yeah, that's probably my passion now, I would have to say, is art. And I'm a member of the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years ago, the government appointed me to the Board of Governors for the Art Gallery. So I'm involved in that quite a bit. And I go to all the art openings that anybody who joins as a member can go to. And it's a good value for money going into that art gallery and mm-hmm. having a membership. I curate the Scott Manor House. So I'm the one who's responsible for refreshing all the exhibits for each summer program. We keep the house open through July and August. And I think it's important to refresh the house and the exhibits so that people come in and don't just say, "Oh, I've seen this before, goodbye," you mm-hmm. know. So that's really what I'm tasked with, is curating the house and making sure that the exhibits look good. And I love doing it. It's another form of art expression, you know, setting up the house and making it look great for visitors. One of the things I mentioned very briefly was that my background was nursing and that I graduated as a registered nurse in St. John, New Brunswick, and did a diploma in obstetrics and a postgrad diploma. But nursing has permeated my life in many facets of my life. And a few decades ago, I studied to become a healing touch practitioner. And that program initially came out of the United States. The holistic nurses in the U.S. Started this program called Healing Touch. And it's very similar to Reiki. You go through levels of training, and in order to be certified in it, you go through a peer review of your practice, and you complete 5 levels of education to do it. I did that, and I conducted a volunteer ministry of healing at the Bedford United Church for over a decade, working with terminally ill cancer patients, and predominantly that was who I treated, but then there would be other folks who would come in for treatments as well that weren't cancer patients. But the majority of people I worked with had cancer, and were in end stages of their life. And it was wonderful for both of us, for the client who got a lot of comfort, and for me who had a wonderful relationship with people at a time in their life when they had huge needs. So I think the nursing background that I had carried me through every facet of my life because it gave me so many skill sets. It was beyond just the practice of nursing. You know, it was organizational, communication, writing, just a capacity to do many, many things. And I really feel my nursing background contributed to everything I did in my life.